Whereas God asks the woman to submit and to reverence her husband, and that's not natural, God tells the man to love and to lead his wife. And what God has in mind is not natural either. You know, when God says, husbands, I want you to love your wives, men usually think of physical love. And that's just one kind of love. And when he says, husbands, love your wives, he isn't using the word for physical love. That word is eros, which means, you know, I like things, I desire things, and it involves the physical and the sensual. There's another word that says the older women should teach the younger women to love their husbands and children, and that's not the word for the godly love he's talking about. There's a second word for love, which is phileo, which means a brotherly love. Nowhere in the Bible is a woman told to love her husband. Nowhere in the Bible. He just says that you wives are to fillet your husbands, right? Love you wives, love your husbands and children, phileo. It means fillet them. No, it doesn't. The word phileo is a brotherly love. It's a love based on reciprocation. You treat me nice, I treat you nice. You stab me, you get it. Okay? Now, in Proverbs 31, where it talks about that virtuous woman, you want to know what really makes her that unbelievable gal? You go back and read chapter 31, verse 10. It says, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Then the next verse gives you the secret. It says, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. And the word trust there is the same, has the same meaning of the New Testament word believe, which means to commit one's whole being unto someone. Remember the line we fed you girls before you decided, yes, you'll marry us? Honey, it's you, you only. You are the only one in the whole world. We looked you into those eyes. We knew all the little things you were going to do to test us to make sure it was real. Remember? I mean, before I married my wife, I always like to tell teenagers, you know, I never kissed my wife till after we were married. That usually throws them. You'll catch that a little later on. And she wasn't my wife till after we were married. But, you know, when I say, I knew you'd catch it later on. But, you know, when you'd kiss her, you had to keep your eyes closed because women peek to see if the man is peeking, right? If he's looking, he is insincere. So we know that they're going to peek. And so even though we're dying to peek, we keep our eyes closed anyway. And that's one of those little check marks. This is it. This is for real. And you hold her hands just right. And you don't crush her. You know, don't try to impress her with how strong you are and crush her little fingers, you know, like this. Or you don't hold it like a fish, you know, and limp. I mean, there's a certain pressure that tells her this is it. Right? All those little things. And she says, there's no question. He is different than every man in the world. And we look into their eyes and we make them feel like they're the only woman in the world. Okay? Now, that more or less is what he's saying, that if we were genuine and for real and didn't have some ulterior motives, why, we would have kept right on treating her like that. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he has no need of spoil. In other words, he isn't even interested in looking for something that doesn't belong to him. But then listen to the next verse. And she will do him good and not evil all her days. So God puts the responsibility on the way we men treat our wives. Now, the third word for love is agape, and this is a love that doesn't come from within us. We don't have any of this. agape is a selfless love, and most of our love is eros or phileo, and it has some self-interest mixed in there. But God says, I want you to agape, love your wife, and this isn't based on reciprocation. Now, that was a tough one for me to overcome, because I sort of expected a little bit of reciprocation, or maybe a little bit of initiative of being nice on her part first, then maybe I give her what she deserves. And God says, uh-uh. Even if she is terrible to live with, I want to be able to love your wife through you. God is saying this. The only way that works, and by the way, the love that God is talking about is not a feeling. The feelings will vary and fluctuate. The love God's talking about is a commitment. It's talking about deciding to be an obedient man to God, and I went through all of the struggles. If I start treating a woman like that, I'm going to lose my manlyhood. She's going to take advantage of me. She's going to walk all over me. I mean, I was threatened by that. You know why? Because it isn't natural for a man to love his wife the way God asks him to love his wife. It's supernatural. When God is saying, I want you to love her by being sensitive to her. When I heard God wants me to lead her, well, praise God. You know, you can't get it all in one package. I'm not a very good lover, but I sure can tell her what to do, because my concept of leadership is telling her what to do. And then the Lord blows you away with this verse when he says, you Christians, this idea of usurping authority should not even be so much as mentioned by my disciples, as do the heathen. Now, he doesn't give us that command as his disciples in the single life and then says, okay, you can switch gears when you get married. Jesus said, if you want to be a leader, the one who is first is what? Last. The one who is first is the servant of all. Do you know it is not natural for me to lead my wife like that? I like my old idea better. When God says, if you really want a leader, serve her. Read Ephesians 5. Jesus gave his life for the church. Was willing even to die for it. Well, I didn't know how to love my wife. I really did not know how. I tried memorizing 1 Corinthians 13, and that was too complicated. Every time you do something, run 16 things through your mind to see if you're being selfish or vaunteth yourself or you're not puffed up or you don't keep account of evil, and I'm going through this whole thing. And, you know, by the time I get through all that, I'm mad and I already blew it. And I'm saying, you know, the Lord has to know that there are simple-minded people like me. You got to get it to me like that so I can grab onto it, so it works. And one day I'm reading in 1 Peter chapter 3, where we just were reading. I had always stopped at verse 6, because that's talking about what the women should do. It never locked in to what verse 7 says, because then verse 7 says, likewise, ye husbands. And then Peter lists 11 things that are responsibilities of us as husbands to our wives. And when I started understanding what that meant, and I started exchanging my way of doing things for the Lord's, all of a sudden, what I couldn't believe was how my wife changed in her response to me. First of all, she probably pinched herself for a long time, wondering how long this would last. The first thing he says is, dwell together with them according to knowledge. Now, if you just take that at face value, I couldn't make it work, because that sounded like what you should do if you're really going to get along is you should have the same education. That's what that sounded like to me. Dwell with her according to knowledge. You have to have the same information. So I'm saying, well, that won't work because I was a Bible major and a Greek minor, and she was an English major and a music minor in college. No wonder we can't communicate. Every time we tried to study the Bible and have devotions in the early days of our marriage, we ended up in an argument. I mean, every time. She'd start to explain what the Lord had just told her in that verse, and I'd say, honey, look, I mean, I don't want to put you down or anything, but you see, the original doesn't mean that. So God, don't say God told you to do this. This may be an idea of your own, and by the time we got done with devotions, I mean, we were both mad, because with her English major, she was always correcting my grammar. With my Bible major, I'm always correcting her interpretation, and we would even pray. Dear Lord, I mean, help us not to end up in a fight tonight. Which just meant I knew we were going to have one. So we just abandoned that. We couldn't figure out how to make that work. Now, that's not what he means. When he says, dwell with her according to knowledge, the word knowledge means insight. It means to understand how life works. And what God is saying is that he has given a woman certain insight into certain aspects of life that the average man doesn't have. And he's given that man certain insight into certain aspects of life that a woman doesn't have, and you need to value her opinions as much as you do your own. Women have that motherly instinct. I used to guess what to do when the babies cried. If I had to get up, I had 3 steps that I'd always work. You change them. That doesn't stop the crying. You feed them. If that doesn't stop the crying, you wake your wife up and give the baby back to her. And the baby would somehow stop crying. It always worked for me. She just had certain insight into certain, and I did not value her opinion when she began to speak. And yet some of the most important information God wants to teach us men, get this, can only be learned from our wives. And if we're too proud to learn from them, guess what? There isn't any other way he's going to try to teach us. There's no other way. She's to be what to me? A helpmeet. I found every time my wife gave her opinion, it was not my wife trying to figure out how to ruin me. My wife's opinion was, in her mind, the best ideas that she could come up with. So value them. The second thing Peter says, and by the way, I really did not understand in trying to value my wife's opinion. One of the little practical things that started to make it work for me is that it seemed like all the things that were important to her were the things that were not important to me. And the things that I knew were important, she wasn't interested in. And I did not even know what was important to her. And so finally, I suggested that we sit down, and it's a great little project to do, sit down and write down on a list all of the things that are important to you as a wife and all that are important to you as a husband. It'll take you about a week to do this. Just carry a sheet of paper around your pocket, you know, up here. And then another thing, oh, yeah, I know. I want them to paint the living room and put that down. And then another thing, oh, yeah, you know, I wish you'd take out the trash without me having to ask them. And you start writing down all these things, and the husband writes down all the things that are important to him, and then exchange the list. And then commit yourself to whatever she writes down as the most important thing to her. Okay? And the man and the wife do the same thing to him. I came home the next day after we had done that and gave Carol a big kiss. And I said, honey, no, I really know it isn't very romantic when you have to tell me what's important to you. But, you know, I'm going to have to learn, because nobody ever told me how to treat a woman. Nobody. My dad died when I was young. My mother never told me how you treat a woman. The church never told me how to treat a woman. The only lecture I got about treating a woman was I was 10 years old, and I hit the pastor's 10-year-old daughter, and I socked her in the chest. And the pastor's wife got mad at me, grabbed my ear and twisted it, and said, don't you ever hit a woman there again. And I never have. And that's all the education I ever had about how you treat a woman. So I come home the next day, give Carol a big kiss, start to walk out of the kitchen, and she says, "Hey." And I turn around, she had this twinkle in her eyes, a smile on her face. I knew she had done something for me. You know, and so you want to pass the test without, you know, too much being too obvious, and I'm running to look real fast, and I thought maybe she cleaned the top of the fridge. No, it's still dirty. What else could it be? And I couldn't figure it out, and I said, "Honey, I don't know what it is you did." And then she told me, "I washed and scrubbed and waxed the floor." Well, I never thought of looking down. But you take that, and I'll tell you, I have seen couples who've been, not 52 years, but I've seen couples that have been married for 40 years and 30 years do that, and they are so amazed. "I didn't know you thought that way." Well, I've been trying to tell you. "Don't you remember I said this?" "Yes, but I didn't know that was the most important thing to you." "Well, how many times have I told you?" "Well, about 30. Never understood what was really important to them. You know, if she puts down number one, paint the living room, she's only been asking you to do it for about 3 years. Okay? And that's number one, and you come home and you look at this ridiculous list and you have 15 minutes. Say, "Let me see this dumb list Coy mentioned." Now, I know what we men would do. "I got 15 minutes, okay?" You get down to number nine, oil the doors that are squeaking. You decide you're going to knock that one off. Guess what, guys? If the room is the most important, take the 15 minutes, get the brushes out. That'll encourage you for at least 2 weeks, okay? One guy wrote on his list, number one, sex. He comes home the next day, and his wife meets him at the door in her negligee, takes him to bed. He comes home the next day, she meets him at the door again, and he realizes he really wanted his cup of coffee first. And by the end of the week, he said, "Give me that list." You know, and he got a new sheet of paper and rewrote that whole thing. And sex, you know, maybe too much of anything's not good. So a lot of people don't even know what they want. Now, the next thing that Peter says is you and I need to show her deference. Now, deference is figuring out what another person likes to do and deciding to do what they would like to do. You know, most of the things my wife would like to do, there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing sinful about them. It's just that I would rather do something else. But do you know that some of those things she would like to do are really important to her? And I could care less. My wife's favorite thing was to go to Howard Johnson's and get a hot fudge sundae. And I used to think in the back of my mind, that would cost too much money. Why not buy the ice cream and bring it home, and I can even have more without paying, and I can have all the chocolate I want and all the nuts. And she wants to go out and sit in the restaurant and talk and not be in a hurry. You know, that was important to her. Deference means when there isn't anything wrong with what they would like to do, and you're in a position to choose something they would like to do over what you would like to do. Isn't that selflessness? You're not losing your manlyhood. You're still the boss. You just, as the boss, decided we're going to do what you want to do. Guess what? Then when those important things come up, I mean the important things, got tickets to the Mets with a couple of guys, it isn't so hard for her to show deference to you. I know there's things that are important to him that he likes I don't think is necessary. You see, and God is saying that without these two things, the next thing he says, if you don't do this, if these are not the two foundational things in your relationship, men, toward her, your relationship with God is dramatically affected. It says, so that your prayers be not hindered. You don't value her. You know who you're mad at? You know who you don't like? God that made her that way. God made her that way. God made her unique. God made her with those opinions. God made her with that reservoir of insight that if you don't value it, you're stiff-arming God. If it's all me and we're going to do what I want to do and you just respond, God says, you are already choosing not to do what I've asked you to do, and there now is developing in our lives as men a problem between us and God. And it's our pride in not being willing to do what God asks us to do. Then the next thing he says, that ye be of one mind. Clarify your ideals and your goals and your objectives. You know, some couples have lost the dreams that they had before they got married. Doesn't mean you're going to take on the whole world. When's the last time you decided to do something together that was special? When's the last time you just got a babysitter and went somewhere together for the evening or for the night? And you're saying, we can't afford that. You would be amazed at what would happen if the two of you would start praying for the money. You'd be amazed. Make that a goal. You can cut back on some other things. Start watching your lives together as a team accomplish things that in your heart you would love to do. You know that if you're married, you increase your effectiveness to the 10th power. If one shall cause 1,000 to flee, yea, 2, 10,000. When I was first married, because I really wasn't responding very well to Carol, I used to gripe that I was married. I mean, if I just wasn't married, if I just didn't have a wife, if I just didn't have a kid to tie me down, I could really do things for God. I mean, then I could really burn out. That was my disposition. And I was burning out all right. I already was losing my wife, and then I was losing my kid. What kind of ministry would I have left? Nothing. So start dreaming together. You know, by the time the dirty clothes and the bills and the differences of opinion and all of that start filtering in and become a part of our routine of life, we just start being a little embarrassed and a little ashamed to even talk about dreams, because maybe she just doesn't even have confidence in me. Maybe she doesn't even believe in me anymore, and she thinks I'm just shooting off at the mouth like I did before I got married. The next thing he says, learn to empathize with her. Now, I'll tell you, I still struggle with this one. You know what it means to empathize? To empathize means to be moved inwardly with the same feelings of distress that she feels. Now, that is still hard for me. I am definitely more sensitive than I was 20 years ago. And my wife will say that also. But I can't tell you how many times I just have to stop in my tracks. I have to try to put myself in her place and try to think through it. And now I can even ask her, honey, how are you feeling? It used to be I didn't know what to do when she had all of these different moods. I about ruined our marriage when she was pregnant the first time because I didn't understand even the chemical change that takes place in a woman's life. For some women. And in my wife, I mean, it was a bright, sunshiny day with nice music on, and we're talking about something nice, and all of a sudden she wells up in tears. And I'm saying, what's the matter?
I don't know.
What happened?
I don't know.
And so I'm ready to give her all these principles for how to respond right to this situation. And guess what? She didn't care about any principles. And then I would try all kinds of things when she was down. Now, first of all, if I came home and she was down, I would get defensive. And my first assumption was she's mad at me. Now what'd I do? I'm going to hear something. It was amazing to me And we began to talk. Stop and think about something. Isn't this really absurd? This is really absurd that we are all grown-ups. We are men and we are women. And you have to come out here on a, what night is this? Monday night, to have an adult tell you that if you're going to live together, you ought to talk. Right? Anybody here didn't know that? Why don't we? Why aren't we? We're saying communication is the biggest problem. And that is. And 80% of all arguments in a marriage is over finances. So you put those two things together. Well, when my wife would be down and we started to talk about it, I mean, I tried everything to cheer up. I go and try to be Mr. Romantic, give her a great big hug and a kiss and be real positive, and that turned her off. A couple times I picked her up and I swung her around the room. Put me down. Would you put me down? Something that didn't work. I mean, I would keep trying to do all these things, which I figured she interpreted as bribery. You know, he wants something. So I did not know. And finally, one day, I said to Carol, I said, honey, I want to tell you something. You know, when I come home and I'm in a good mood and you're down, I do not know what to do. Is there anything I could do that you would like for me to do? She said, sure. This is after 7 years of marriage. I mean, it just came off the top of her lips like that. Sure. I said, well, what would you like me to do? And she said, when I'm down like that, I would like you to just walk over to me, put your arms around me, don't say anything, don't do anything, just hold me. And I'm waiting for more. And I run this input through my little computer, and the printout comes back. You can do this. Two days later, I left the house. Good mood. We were laughing when I left. I'm expecting to come in and pick up where we left off, and I walk in the house. And I said, hey, honey, I'm home. And from the far bedroom, I get this drone. Hi. And I mean, just like that, I mean, I hit bottom. I said, now what's the matter? And then I remembered. So I went over to Carol, went into the other room, went over to Carol, put my arms around her. Didn't say anything, didn't do anything, and I'm feeling very foolish. And then I'm saying, you know what, I forgot to ask her, how long am I supposed to do this? Now, I learned to be a little more empathetic, you know, show a little more feeling. But do you know that more than half the time when she was down like that, it had nothing to do with me? She may have been frustrated because she's behind in her work, or the baby may have been a terrible day with one of the children, and you know it. And, but I was always taking it personal. The next thing Peter says is learn to bear her burdens. Be a good listener. Do you know that your wife likes to talk to you and ask questions, and she does not want an answer? She wants no answer. And it took me years to figure that out. I mean, my wife would start to talk, and honey, what do you think about? And then I would give her my answer. I had an answer for that one. And you know, just wait a minute, where do I finish? I said, well, honey, you asked me a question. Well, I know, but don't answer that right now. Well, what'd you ask the question for? And we'd get in arguments like this over that. And I could not, but you know, when somebody comes to me for counseling, they ask me all kinds of questions. What do you do about this? What do you do about this? Another problem I've got is this, and what do you do? I don't say, whoa, stop, let me answer that one. I sit there and I listen to the whole story. And then I listen for what they leave out. And then I ask some more questions so I really get into, so that they really have ended up telling me. Then I see the picture. Do you know that when my wife started to talk and then I would listen for what she was leaving out and ask her some more questions, Whereas in the past, even when I first started out, I was saying, come on, hurry up, get this over with. I'm supposed to listen, but get it over with, hurry. And I started sincerely listening to what it was she wanted to talk about. It changed her whole disposition. She wasn't frustrated. She didn't have to say it real fast. Learn to be a listener. You know, every one of these things that I'm talking about require one thing. What? Huh? Time. Every one of these things require time. That's why what we talked about last night is so important. I said, you've got to figure out, wives, you've got to figure out, husbands, what is the legitimate time you both need for each other? And it'll be different for every couple here. What's the legitimate time? There has to be a certain amount of time where the two of you can take care of the things that need to be dealt with about yourselves, about the family, all of those things. There's got to be the time. Then he says, be compassionate. And the word there means to be tender-hearted. That's almost as bad as the previous one for me. I didn't know what tender-hearted meant. We had a couple visiting us one time. Right after I read this, that's how these things happen. I find another insight in the scriptures, and next thing I know, I've got another illustration right in front of me. And they were visiting us from out of town, and this friend of mine said, and Carol and I were getting along fine. We'd just been out to dinner the night before. The kids were fine, as far as I knew. And my friend says at 1 o'clock in the morning, Larry, can I ask Carol a question? I said, sure, go ahead. So he turns to Carol, and he says, Carol, do you really feel that Larry gives you all the time that you really need? That was such an easy question. I just sort of relaxed and said to myself, let him have it, honey. And Carol looks across the table and she says, no. And I about fall off the chair. And then she says, well, I wouldn't say that he doesn't give me all the time that he needs, you know, but he could be more tender-hearted. Well, that was worse than the first answer. Because I did not know what tender heart, I'm thinking, what is tender heartedness? I mean, the only thing I could picture was somebody tiptoeing through the tulip, some pansy, you know? So I'm getting tired, and I say, you know, I think it's time we go to bed. So I go upstairs, and I'm sitting at my desk in my bedroom, and Carol comes in, and I said, I just want to tell you something. I feel like I have just been in the biggest double cross of my marriage. She looks at me. She says, what do you mean? I said, you down there telling him I ought to be more tender-hearted. Now, what do you mean by tender-hearted? You could see how tender-hearted I was, right? And she said, well, I don't know how to explain it. That's just the first word that came to my mind. I said, well, what is tender-hearted? How do you explain that? She says, I don't know how to explain it. And I felt so much better. I'm saying, you know, if she can't explain it, how can I do it? I wake up the next morning, and these verses in Ephesians 4 are going through my mind. And be ye kindly affectionate one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And I start back through that verse a second time, and I open my eyes. You know, tender-hearted, oh my land, it's in the book. You know what that means? God wants me to change. God wants me to work on that attitude of my life. Now, the next thing Peter says is be courteous. Have good manners. I had terrific manners before I married Carol. I opened the door every time. I mean, if it was raining, I would stand out there and get soaked. So she'd be impressed with me. After I was married, it was, honey, while you're hanging up your coat, here's mine. Honey, it's pouring. Your door's closer than mine. You get in your side and then open mine, I'll run. And when I started paying attention to this, you know, I had two daughters by then. And I had to start all over, and I sat them down and I said, look, from now on, I'm going to start working on my manners. I'm going to open the door for you. I came home the next Sunday, walked in the house, started to hang up my coat. It was dead silent in the house. I look around, where is everybody? I go open the front door, and there's the girls waving through the car window. I had to go open the door. You know, when you start all over, you are always on the wrong side of the door. I mean, you ever notice that? I mean, now you're trying to cross over in front of her. Another problem I had was, what do you do if you're walking out through a big, heavy door, glass door? I mean, do you push the door open and go outside and stand and hold it? Or do you stand inside and rupture your armpit? Most of the women that I've asked say, rupture your armpit. I had a fellow in Boston. In fact, he's in, I got to watch myself. I say, an older man in his 50s. You know, I'll be 50 this year. He says, honey, you know, from now on, I'm going to open the door. And so he came back the next night and said, you know what happened last night? He said, I went home, drove in the garage, shut the garage door, went in the house, got a sandwich, had a glass of milk, went up to bed, brushed my teeth, got my pajamas, was crawling into bed, and the car horn starts beeping. He said, I had to go down the garage and let her out of the car. Another couple at the same seminar, the girl forgot about it. And at the seminar, you know, the husband said to her, honey, I'm going to start showing good manners. So he walks out at the end of the seminar and opens the door for her, and she looks up and says, what, you want me to drive? Now, do you know, I'm convinced if you have daughters, the kind of manners that you as a dad show your girls will determine the kind of guys they marry. See, there's two real needs that a woman has, communication and sensitivity. And you know, when a girl's young, the average guy doesn't know how to treat a girl right, because we're not very sensitive. A girl doesn't care about that, because she's more concerned about this boy's opinion of her and acceptance of her, and therefore she doesn't think that's important, only to find out after the marriage that what? That's what is important. And so I've made it a goal with each of my girls to treat them like princesses. That's been my goal. That's why I took trips every year alone with each of my daughters. And in the back of my mind was, I want to see if I can't treat them as kind as I know how. Probably paid more attention to that than even my wife.